One of the most quoted lines written by Dr. Ernest Holmes, who was the founder of this teaching, The Science of Mind, and it was a line that he used to open his weekly television and radio shows in the 50s, black and white TV, organ in the background, you know, kind of thing. And the line was this. He said, "There is a power for good in the universe greater than we are, and you can use it." Very, very simple. Now, it was also a very powerful statement, but there were a lot of people from the more traditional religions who were really bothered by this idea of using God, because they said that idea was sacrilegious, and they were right. It was sacrilegious. However, even though it was against the old traditional ideas, which is what sacrilegious means, it was very much in tune with the spiritual truth that was taught for thousands of years by people who understood the true nature of God and how that nature exists in us. So Dr. Holmes, who was had a lovely sense of humor, he didn't mind stepping on a few toes to say something that made perfect sense to him about the God of his understanding. But there was another part of that statement, there's a power for good in the universe greater than we are, and you can use it, that also caused confusion for some people, even among those people who were already open to a greater idea about God. And that was the idea that this perfect creative intelligence, this power that created everything out of itself, was purely a power for good. Because that idea was hard for a lot of people to accept. Now, it wasn't that they didn't want to believe it. I mean, all of us want to believe that whatever this power is that created us and keeps everything working, we all want to believe that it's a power for good. We like to think that God is nice and friendly and helpful and that it only wants the best for us. But when we look around at the world and we see a lot of things that don't look very good at all, like war and hunger and poverty, and earthquakes, and fires, and tsunamis, and all those things, it gets a little bit confusing. When we see children suffering and dying by the millions, and we see addiction and greed, and we see people refusing to help one another, we say to ourselves, you know, this doesn't look very good to me at all. And then what happens is we start to wonder if this creative intelligence, this manifester of infinite good that Dr. Holmes talks about, is even paying attention. That's what we start to wonder. We wonder what's happening when we start to experience events or events go on in the world like what happened in India recently. Most of you have seen the news. 9/11, any of these other things, or any of the natural disasters that happen across the planet every day, we wonder what's going on. We wonder what reason there could possibly be if God is supposed to be so good for these things to happen, let alone for us to experience things like disease, divorce, downsizing, or even death. Now, in teachings like this one, the New Thought teachings, we call them, we talk all the time about how we create our own reality and about how we always experience whatever we are carrying in our consciousness. We talk about that every week. We talk about it in our classes. And once you get your mind around that idea, it's pretty easy to understand on an intellectual level. Because we can see how not taking care of our body can lead to getting sick, or how some foolish financial decisions can get us on the wrong side of the prosperity curve. We can see how the tendency to always want to be right or to lose our temper might get in the way of creating a deep, loving, and lasting relationship with someone. But when we start to look at events that are much larger than these personal events, where it seems like either the forces of nature or the government or just random events are trying to overwhelm us and a lot of other people, we're just part of a huge mass of people being affected, it's harder for us to accept that we had anything at all to do with creating that circumstance. We begin to think that maybe we were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, or maybe that God is somehow trying to tell us something. But there's another possibility we have to consider. Maybe the things that we perceive as random chaos or natural disasters, maybe these things are actually opening a door to something better than whatever existed before. In other words, maybe the good that is in God, the good that we're always looking for, the goodness that comes from this power, so to speak, is actually going to show up through events that we call bad. In fact, maybe that's the only way that it can show up. Not because Spirit can only do it that way, but because there is something that we need to change or something that we need to learn before something better can happen. That's what I want to talk about a little bit this morning. Now, the reason I thought about this is because today is, anybody know what today is? December 7th, remember? What is that? That is a day that will live in infamy, you know, you remember hearing about that? And it is the anniversary of when the Japanese attacked the United States in Pearl Harbor, and that was an event that shook the world, and it brought the United States into a war where over 50 million people were killed, not just affected, 50 million people killed, including 6 million people who died in the Holocaust. So by anybody's standards, World War II across the planet was bad. But if you can back up a little bit and look at that war and look at it objectively, out of that terrible event and all the things that happened, something that negatively affected virtually every person on the planet, out of that came some amazing things. For example, all the nations of the world got together and rebuilt the great cities of Europe through the Marshall Plan. In Japan, while we had martial law with MacArthur over there, we sent management experts who trained people who became the leaders of the huge corporations that changed the world, like Sony and Honda and Toyota and all those organizations. And even in 1948, just a few years after the war was over, as a direct result of what happened during the Holocaust, the Jewish people did something they had never done in all of history. They established the State of Israel, which is one of the most powerful states of countries in the world right now, technologically and in many other ways. Now, most of us believe these were good things, but they came out of something bad. Now, this idea of good coming out of bad is actually one of the most basic spiritual principles that we need to learn and understand. Not that it's necessary for good to come out of bad, because it's not, and not that God supposedly wants it that way, as the traditional teachings tell us, because we do not have to suffer before we can be happy. That's not true at all. What I mean when I say that it is one of the great spiritual principles is, once we understand that good always triumphs in the end, that that's the natural state of a spiritual world, because life is good, then we can stop wasting so much time creating problems along the way, and we can start going straight to the good without having to go through so many of our foolish mistakes beforehand. Now, Dr. Holmes says it this way. I want to read you a short paragraph leading into this, and it's somebody always asked me. It's on page 107, all right, in the book. Okay, he says this. He says, "The world is beginning to realize that it has learned all it should through suffering and pain. Surely," he says, "there can be no intelligence in the universe that wishes us to be sick, suffer pain, be unhappy, and end in oblivion. Surely if God, or universal intelligence, is imbued with goodness, filled with goodness, then it," meaning good, could not ordain that we should ultimately be other than a perfect expression of life." All right? It could not ordain that we would be other than a perfect expression of life. Now, if this is true, and anyone with a bit of sense and a little bit of spiritual understanding can see that it is, the question obviously becomes, why don't we live life as if it were supposed to be good? Why don't we do that? As individual expressions of God, which is what we are, and a race of spiritual beings, which we are too, why do we have to fight wars before we can find peace? Why do we have to develop medical technology on the battlefield before we can use it in our hospitals? Why do people have to starve before we start figuring out better ways to create food? And why do we have to criticize other people's race, religion, or lifestyles before recognizing that we're all the same inside? I mean, God, this power for good, doesn't want to make things hard for us, so why do we insist on making things hard for ourselves? Okay? It's very strange. Now, the good news is, over the course of history, our understanding about this process seems to be improving. Back in the very beginning, in the earliest days of civilization, whenever something happened, like a famine or a drought or an epidemic or a plague or whatever it was, people back then in the beginning believed that God or the gods, if they believed in more than one, that God was doing something to them for his or her own reasons. Now, some people believe that God was angry, so they tried to figure out what was making God angry and do something to make him happy, like sacrificing something. Some people did that. Some people believed God was testing them, though the only thing they ever learned was how to endure more suffering, so that didn't make much sense. And some people believed that God liked some people better than others, certain religions, their God liked them, whatever, so he did bad things to people he didn't like and good things for people he did, which made pretty much sense to them. And these were all pretty good explanations at the time, as long as God was seen as some mysterious power that was way out there with all of the power and his own agenda. But the problem with this way of thinking was there was nothing you could do about these bad things except to suffer through whatever happened and hope that it didn't last too long. And that's not a great way to live. Because the prevailing mentality at the time was God was God, life is hard, and then you die. And that's not a formula for spiritual growth, if you think that way, okay? So no one saw their own behavior or their own decisions or their own beliefs as having any connection at all to what was going on around them in the world. So they never saw any reason to change what they thought or believed. But a number of years later, around the time that the Jewish nation formed a covenant, so to speak, with God, things started to change a little bit. Because God was still a far-off power in some place called heaven or whatever it was, but now they could at least communicate. Now they had an arrangement. So if they behaved in a certain way, God would help them, and if they didn't behave that way, if they broke the agreement, then God would either punish them or stop protecting them, which back then amounted to the same thing. So now there was some personal responsibility. And if something bad happened to the tribe or to the family or to the individual, people at least had some idea. They figured they must have broken the agreement. And then came what is called, at least in the West, the Christian era, most of which had little or nothing to do with the teachings of Jesus, but a lot to do with the power of church, but that's what they called it. So let's talk about the teacher himself. The master teacher, Jesus, who we believe was an enlightened person, just like you and I are capable of being, he suggested that to God, what he called the Father within, that was the term he used, he suggested that what we think is even more important than what we do or what we say. He said that what we think in our heart is what we're going to become. He said that our belief in the possibility of healing is what heals us, not what goes on outside. He said that if we believe something is already done in our mind, then it will be done and that we could do greater things than he did. He said all of these things, if you look them up in the book they use. And he told us something else. He told us that the gift that we need is already given. And the gift he was speaking of was the gift of life. And his unmistakable message, if you read it, is that life is good. Now, from a spiritual perspective, this was an entirely different way of thinking because it said that living the good life is not about trying to get God's attention or trying to make God happy. It's about changing our thoughts and our beliefs so that we could be in tune with Spirit, so that we could constantly experience the goodness of life. That's why Paul, the other guy, not me, he said, he had an interesting statement. He said, "Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." Ever hear that statement before? Think of what it means in terms of what we teach, not in terms of catechism class. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. So that means instead of continually creating problems and then learning our lessons by solving them, which is trial and error that works, but it's not a whole lot of fun, maybe we could actually learn from the intelligence within us, from the spiritual wisdom that's available to us, and maybe we could learn things and create without hurting ourselves and other people in the process. Now, we may still feel some pain as we grow, as we change, but we wouldn't have to go through these long bouts of suffering or all these big events that make life seem so difficult. So all of the energy that we spend on fighting and arguing and avoiding the truth, instead of doing that, we could now spend our energy on building and growing and creating, and we could actually do it together as a race. We wouldn't have to do it separately because that's the way we're meant to live. That's what makes life so good. You see, part of our problem is the way that we have taught ourselves to look at the world, because we see separation everywhere. We really do. We see separation from each other. We're separated from nature. We're separated from the rest of the universe. We're separated from God. We're even separated from ourselves through overwork, addiction, and flat-screen TVs, all those kind of things. So we practice our spiritual life, if we have one, you know, during one small part of the week like this, or during a few minutes every day, but our physical experience is what takes up most of our time and our attention. We're completely obsessed with the world around us. We're obsessed with protecting our ego, protecting our stuff, and struggling for the illusion of control. And if we feel that someone or something is threatening us, then we call that thing bad and we start to fight back. Not only that, we are building our homes and our cities, and we expand our technology with absolutely no regard to the laws of nature. And then we claim to be helpless when the fires start, or the water disappears, or the air starts to be unfit to breathe. And what we are doing when we are doing this is not being punished. We are simply suffering from our own ignorance, hoping for somebody else to solve our problems. And what's going to be interesting is how far we need to go in this suffering that we kind of create before we become smart enough or frightened enough to do what we should have been doing all along. Now, as a general rule, we tend to look at our world and categorize things as either good or bad. That's what we do. And we do that according to whether we like what's going on or not. But what we need to do, this is what we could try, if we start to think spiritually, is start to define our world as either being in tune with life or out of tune with life. Because it's all spiritual. It's all good. There really is no good or bad. There is only constructive and destructive. Take these two words instead of good and bad, constructive and destructive. Constructive thinking and creating means life-enhancing, growing, evolving, all these things according to the laws of life, and we all know what those are. But destructive does not mean going against the law of life. Destructive simply means going backwards. It means taking apart what we should be putting together. You see, when we're destroying something, whether it's another country, our environment, or our own life, we do all three of them, we are still using the laws of life. We're just using them in a negative way. We're just using them in a negative way. So the important thing to remember is that any act of destruction that we are involved in, whether we are perpetrating it or simply attracting it, can always be stopped and turned around. Things like war, depression, disease, all the stuff that we see, all of these things can change in an instant. But it can't happen in the physical world unless it happens in here first, in our thoughts. So when we begin to act constructively instead of destructively, we do this not by doing something out there. We do it by changing something in here. We do it by changing our focus from fear to love. We do it by changing our focus from separation to connection. We do it by focusing on the good that's always there, even if we can't see it, and by no longer giving energy to something that we used to call the bad. Now, the Eastern traditions, Buddhism, Hinduism, Zen, all these different ones, they got this idea very early on. There's an old Zen saying that says, "Now that my house has burned down, I have a much better view of the moon." It's a beautiful statement. It really, really is, you know? It's a wonderful statement. That shows the ability to see the gift in anything that happens. Many of you know the story. It's a story about a poor Chinese farmer who had one horse, very, very poor, and one day the horse ran away, and all his neighbors said to the farmer, "What terrible luck," and the farmer said, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" So the next day the horse returned and he brought with him a herd of wild horses that the farmer now owned. And all his neighbors said, "How wonderful." And the farmer said, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" So the next day his only son was out trying to tame one of the wild horses and he was thrown from the horse and he broke his leg very badly. And the people, his neighbors, said, "How terrible." And the farmer said, "What? Good luck, Bad luck, who knows? The next day, the king's soldiers came through, and they took every able-bodied young man off to war, but his son couldn't go because his leg was broken so badly. And the people said, how wonderful, and the farmer said, good luck, bad luck, who knows? The key here is to stop seeing all of the events in our life as good or bad and start seeing all the events in our life as valuable. And if we can also see the events in our life as something we created or something we attracted, then that's even better. Because we know that if we created it or we attracted it, after we learn what we need to learn, we can uncreate it. We don't have to stay mired in our misery. Now, sometimes this is hard to remember, especially when we are in a devastating or frightening situation. If we have been diagnosed with an illness, or someone we love has been, or the money is almost gone, or the walls are falling down around us, whatever that looks like, it's not always easy for us to remember that something good is possible, not only possible, but that something good is ready and waiting to appear. But if we don't believe in the good, and we don't expect the good, and we don't create a space in our consciousness for that good to happen, it'll still be there, but we're probably going to miss it, all right? And the truth is, our greatest good can appear in the middle of our greatest fear or our deepest pain. It happens all the time. Now today, right here, right now, 2008, I guess. Today, a lot of us are looking at the events in the world. You know the conversations. A couple of you probably even participated in them, you know, calling these things bad or a few of them good. But that's something we need to change. Maybe we can start calling some things good and the other things good unfolding. Wouldn't that be better, all right, than bad? I mean, look at the economy, for example. Great example I saw earlier this week. There are a lot of bad words going around in the economy right now, okay? Recession, depression, inflation, deflation, meltdown, all these wonderful words that they're doing. But I read an article the other day, and it was from an experienced investor who had been around for a while, and he said that 5 years from now, we will look back at this time as a historic buying opportunity and an incredible once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to create unbelievable wealth. You ever read that in the mainstream media? Never. It's an attitude. It's a completely different attitude. Now, this is not just about seeing the silver lining in the dark cloud. It's not just about learning the lessons from our problems. What I'm talking about here is something deeper than that. It is about knowing, and when I say knowing in a spiritual sense, I mean knowing, internalizing it, believing it with every cell of our being. It is about knowing that the natural flow of life all the time is forward and upward, all the time, and that the divine process is always working through us, and when we work with it, things turn out better. It's about consciously and deliberately releasing the fear, not giving it attention, turning away from grief, anger, whatever's holding us back, and embracing a greater possibility, not because God wants it that way, but because life works better that way. We all know this. Now, with all that being said, if we are honest about this, the likelihood of our having a stress-free, worry-free, and problem-free life is probably pretty slim, especially if you've got a family that you have to talk to. Okay, now, somebody was listening. Good, I laughed. You know, even the Buddha, Jesus, and Mother Teresa had their problems. Of course, Jesus had a mother. Buddha probably did. So, you know, they whatever. But the ability for us to be completely at peace in the world, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, that's what matters. Whatever we happen to be going through is not something that we need to learn. Once again, it's a gift that we've already been given. So all we need to do is to recognize that gift and to let it show up in our life and use it until it becomes our primary way of thinking and being. And once we finally do that, we can allow ourselves to move towards the good that's already there and already ours. That's what we believe, and we can leave the rest behind. And if we do it right, we can have a lot more fun in the process. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is. Oh, thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a few minutes. Take a deep breath here, just a few moments, to take these ideas, take those that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others and recognize this truth, that life is good. Whatever is going on right now, whatever medical condition, whatever financial condition, whatever family situation, whatever relationship complication, none of these things needs to remain. Each one of them can be replaced by the possibility of a greater good that comes from love and understanding and non-judgment and acceptance and a feeling of joy that we allow ourselves to experience no matter what. That's the inner truth of our being. And that inner truth is what creates our outer experience. It creates our relationship with every person in our life. It creates our relationship with our work, our relationship with our body, and our relationship with the power that created it all. So as we recognize that we are the ones who choose to see what we want to create, our eyes are opened. Our heart is opened. Our mind is opened. All of it is opened so that the spiritual truth of our being can now begin to do what it does, which is to show us what life can be instead of our being confused with what we think life is. So I invite you to take a few moments now in the silence of your own heart and mind. And in this silence, simply recognize what it is that you fear. Do you fear the loss of a relationship? Do you fear the loss of yourself? Do you fear the loss of your money, of your job, whatever it is? And recognize that there is no loss. There is only a creation of something better. So in your mind's eye, get that sense of joy and growth and awareness of a greater good in your life. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we know this truth, we accept it, we accept the goodness of life, we accept the goodness of ourselves, the goodness of spirit, and the goodness of everything around us. This is our new focus in this moment. And we give thanks for this awareness and a deep appreciation for all that we have been given and all that we have yet to give. We now release this into consciousness, knowing that as our intent goes out, it returns to us multiplied abundantly. We accept it and release it, and so it is.